St. Mary's and USF see their seasons end. The Zags move on to their ninth straight Sweet 16. The portal starts to heat up. Welcome all into what for me is going to be a gut punch episode of the unofficial WCC Hoops podcast. Just got back from my trip to Spokane for the NCAA tournament. My first time in Spokane, and obviously not to see St. Mary's play the Zags, although it did very much seem like a road game for St. Mary's at Spokane Arena. Got to spend some time up there. It was a great time with the people, the Gales that I was able to meet, the Zags I was able to meet, and everyone in between. The NCAA tournament's always a great trip, a great experience. Get to experience a new city and all that sort of stuff. And we'll get into the game in a little bit. We'll get to Gonzaga getting to their ninth straight Sweet 16 and the two blowouts that they got to see. Also that we know that they'll be playing Purdue this coming Friday in Detroit, rematch of their second round game in the Maui from the Maui Invitational. And a lot of news coming from the portal, as well as we're starting to see more names start to pop up, even though it seems like this is happening maybe a little too fast on when guys can start jumping in and jumping out. So we'll get into all that a little bit later. But I'm going to start with what happened to St. Mary's in the first round of the NCAA tournament. If you somehow did miss it over the weekend, yes, St. Mary's did drop their opener to 12th-seeded Grand Canyon, 75-66. And it was Grand Canyon's first tournament win ever. They did then lose a close one to Alabama just on Sunday night. And just taking the step back, just the initial thoughts of that game, Grand Canyon played a great game. They had a game plan. They executed to perfection. They harassed the St. Mary's guards. They harassed Augustus Marshallonis. They harassed Aiden Mahaney. They harassed Alex Dukas and made life very difficult for all three of them. They were on the attack really the entire game on the other end of the floor, because we know that one of the things they love to do is get to the free throw line, which they did a lot of in this one. And St. Mary's never seemed to get into an offensive rhythm, and it seemed that they were slow to make adjustments as well. A lot of early turnovers in that first half, which led to a 1-point advantage for Grand Canyon at the half. And in that one, it seemed like everything kind of went wrong for St. Mary's. They weren't shooting well. They were turning the ball over too much. They rebounded actually fairly well in the half. They ended up being +6 in the rebounding column for the game. But everything just seemed to be going Grand Canyon's way, and it was a 1-point game at the half, which, again, all things considered, I think you take it. If you're not playing well, it's a 1-point game. Awesome. Make some halftime adjustments and move forward. But that was not what we saw in the second half. What we saw in the second half was Grand Canyon really put the pedal to the metal there in that second half. They went on a 17-1 run midway through the half to take a 17-point lead. And that really was kind of the nail in the coffin, was that big run there, which gave them that 17-point lead. And St. Mary's was able to kind of crawl back into it, get within 6, but could not get string stops together, could not string buckets together to make it any closer. Taking a look at this one, St. Mary's did have 5 guys end up in double-figure scoring. Aiden Mahaney had 13 points, but he was 5-for-21 from the field. Augustus Marshallonis, 10 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds, but 5 turnovers in this one. He got into foul trouble. One of the bright spots of the game was Jordan Ross. He came in that first half plate and played a good number of minutes. He played 10 minutes for the game, had 4 points. He had an assist, a steal. It was a good sign for kind of the future of seeing what Jordan Ford is going to be capable of. Like, he was a spark plug for that team. And even though he made a couple of mistakes, you got to that he was a bright spot for that game. Mitchell Saxon, 14 and 11. This dude was just getting hammered all game long. It seemed anytime he touched the ball down in the post, they really collapsed on him quickly. I mean, Grand Canyon's athleticism was really on display in this one because they were able to recover really well if Saxon were able to kick it back out. St. Mary's did not shoot particularly well from three as well. But at least, I mean, it's one of the positives. You got 11.6 assists from each of Mason Forbes and Luke Barrett. So you were getting some added depth to what they were trying to do on the offensive end. But Grand Canyon really, like their defense, their energy, their game plan was the story. Like this squad came out to play and they were ready. Tyon Grant Foster, every bit of the player that we had heard about leading up to the game, every bit of the player that we've seen him be all year long. That guy has NBA level talent. I would not be surprised to hear his name called in June during the NBA draft. He had 22 points, 6 for 13 from the field. Ray Harrison, another guy like a kind of we I circled his name too. 17.6 assists in that one. He got in a little bit of foul trouble. So did Grant Foster, but they were able to kind of stem the tide. But I mean, the number when you're looking at all the stats that really jumps out is that free throw number. 36 attempts for Grand Canyon, all only 12 for St. Mary's. And I mean, it did feel like to me that there was a lot of swallowing of the whistle. There was calls being made one way, but not the other way. And maybe that impacted how St. Mary started to go about it. And we've kind of gone over this over and over throughout the course of the season. It's like that sometimes this level of officiating, this poor officiating happens, and that's just kind of how you have to deal with it. I don't like blaming the refs, because I think that St. Mary's did enough other things not well in this one that I don't think it matters necessarily what the officiating did, even if there was a 21-point swing from the free throw line, because you get a lot of what the everything else that happened that St. Mary's kind of did well. Held Grand Canyon to shooting 43% from the field. They were plus 6 in rebounding. They were plus 8 in offensive rebounds. They were plus 6 in points in the paint. But they shot 38% from the field. They were 7 for 25 from three. They could not get any easy looks. Alex Dukas only had 5 field goal attempts in what was his final game as a St. Mary's Gale. And it is a disappointing end to a roller coaster of a season. They ended up finishing 26-8. They won the WCC regular season title. They won the tournament title. This was a team that started 3-5 and then rolled off one of the best runs in school history. They won 16 straight games at one point. They had a third straight 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. And it does stink. I think there is a little bit of an added feeling of disappointment, not only because it looked like that this team had found kind of like that rhythm and found a formula that was going to work in the NCAA tournament. I do think that obviously they missed Josh Jefferson in this game. I don't know if it necessarily would have made the difference between a win and a loss, but it definitely would have been a different feel, different game plan, I think, for Grand Canyon had Jefferson been available. And then also the fact that it had to end in the home, not the home, but like the home city of your biggest rival in Gonzaga. That the fact that it ended in Spokane, I think, stung just that much more. And there was a little like there was definitely some hostility. I didn't directly experience some of this, but number of people I was on the trip with was were able to kind of share stories of just different things that happened in the building that were just kind of like not just kind of uncalled for things like yelling at the St. Mary's cheerleaders, saying "F you" to them, or That sort of thing is uncalled for. Like, I get yelling at the players, yelling at the coaches. That's kind of par for the course with sports. You kind of like expect that, especially for anyone that has an impact on the court. Like, that's while it can, while even that can get a little extreme, not saying that specifically for this one was extreme, but that's more, that's just kind of, that's part of the deal. That's part of the sporting event experience, regardless of college basketball, baseball, whatever, what any sport, that's kind of part of the deal. But for the others who have no impact on the court, again, like cheerleaders or the band or the or anything like that, it's like that feels like it's crossing a little bit of a line. So I was pretty disappointed to hear some of that from the crowd. And now on the flip side, there were a number of Gonzaga people who came up to myself and others and said, like, oh, we're pulling for you in the tournament. That they had us in their bracket to actually get to the Sweet 16 and get a little bit deeper into the tournament. And while it's, I was very, very appreciative to hear all that, I also had Gonzaga going deeper into the tournament. I had them in the Sweet 16, so they're kind of down there right where I had them at this stage. But it's always kind of like, well, how many people were of those were in the building? Because that crowd inside Spokane Arena was a very, very pro Grand Canyon crowd. And part of it was also because Grand Canyon traveled really well. They had the student section, the Havoc, right there on their side of the bench. So I mean, so there was a number of the Grand Canyon people cheering them on, but it did seem like there was also this added the added punch of the Zag fans who then rounded out that very road game feeling inside Spokane Arena for St. Mary's. Now, all that aside, the game was disappointing. I had fun on my first trip to Spokane with the group of people I was with, the people I got to talk with, the places we got to go. That's part, like, for me, it's like these trips is like that's a huge part of it, is being able to experience these new places. And we got to go around, like, a couple of the spots that really kind of stuck out to me. Got to go to Frank's Diner, so like I love that kind of like old, that kind of like older feel of like kind of like that traditional American style diner. Got so went there one of the mornings for breakfast in the old train car. Also got to watch. I went a couple different times to Brick West Brewing to catch some of the games. I saw some of the early games on Friday there, and then went back to watch the Zags game on Saturday there as well. So that was a really cool experience. I am a craft beer person, so like I thought that was some of the better beer I had had throughout the entire trip. So all of that like was definitely a fun time. Did end up cutting the trip a little bit short because obviously we picked up the loss. But all in all, good time heading to Spokane. I do not believe it'll be the last time I head up there. Next time, probably for a Gonzaga St. Mary's game. But we'll see how that all goes. So the season does end disappointingly for St. Mary's. Kind of is what it is at this point. Most of this team should return by to next year. You lose Mason Forbes, you lose Alex Dukas. Mitchell Saxon has the option to return. He still has his COVID redshirt year to use, so we will see what happens there. Same goes for Luke Barrett. So we'll see again, like these a couple of these pieces that have the opportunity to come back and see if they do. And if they do, this looks like on paper a very stacked team with a group that is already in house. Then you the two red shirts, Jensen Bradkey and Andrew McKeever become available, and both of them should play, I think, a pretty not significant, not necessarily an overall significant role, but like they will definitely play a role in the depth of the St. Mary's team in a year from now. Josh Jefferson coming back from his injury, that's another big one. And then what happens with the two ESPN top 100 kids, Mikey Lewis and Zion Sensley, as well as the Aussie import Dent, who's going to kind of round out, like this is going to add a lot of depth to the squad. Also, don't forget Rory Hawk will be coming back off of his injury as well. He got hurt all the way back in December during the UNLV game, and he was critical for the win in that one before he went down with the knee injury. So that kind of wraps it up for St. Mary's. We'll start to kind of break down the off season and everything else as we go along in the next few weeks, and start to really kind of analyze and start to look forward a little bit at what the 24-25 season will look like. And as is tradition, Gonzaga has moved on to the Sweet 16. They won both of their games in resounding fashion. They crushed McNeese 86-65, and then completely overwhelmed a shorthanded Kansas team 89-68. Moving on to play Purdue, the one seeded Purdue on Friday in Detroit. They are the overall number one seed. So this is going to be, they're not the overall number one seed. That is UConn. I take that one back. But this is a Purdue team that has been in this position and has not yet kind of surpassed getting to that next level. This is going to, to an extent, be new territory for Purdue, but not so for Gonzaga. At least a good number of the pieces on this Gonzaga team have seen this second weekend before. And they've also seen further than this before. Obviously, Ben Gregg and Anton Watson, Nolan Hickman were all on this team a year ago that got to the Elite Eight. They know what this environment is going to be like. And it's going to be probably a very hostile one for Gonzaga in Detroit, because Purdue is only a short drive away from the Motor City. So we'll also get into a little bit more of that specific matchup later this week. So we'll grab somebody for an interview. We'll dive a little bit more into this Purdue Gonzaga matchup as far as what that's going to look like on Friday night. But these two wins were kind of almost the reminder of who Gonzaga is. And I thought it was really fascinating and almost comical when I saw the number of people who were picking McNeese to beat Gonzaga, because as I was kind of rolling through that and then saw that one, it's like I did not even hesitate to pick Gonzaga in that one. And sure enough, like that was, I'm glad I didn't hesitate, because this game was over really fast. Gonzaga just moved the ball so well in this game. 22 assists, 10 for 21 from three. They were just all over McNeese from the beginning. Anton Watson, 13-13-9, near triple-double. Dusty Stromer played well in this game as well. He contributed very early on in this one. He ended up playing 30 minutes, having 10 points. Graham EK was 6 for 6 from the field. He had 16 points, 10 rebounds. I mean, I was watching this one from Jack and Dan's with some of the other St. Mary's people, and this was over just so fast. We kind of almost like stopped paying attention really by halftime, because it was such a blowout, and the Zags had made it so one-sided already at that point. And even looking at it as like taking the step back, once we got the news about Kevin McCullers being unavailable for the rest of the NCAA tournament from Kansas, immediately I was thinking, oh, Gonzaga's got this now down pat. They have on paper a clear path to the Sweet 16. And this Kansas team put up a fight for a half. Like, this was a good, really good game, really entertaining game through that first half. Kansas had a 44-43 lead at the break. But then Gonzaga just flipped the switch in the second half and just torched the Jayhawks. They went on a 15-0 run. They're midway in the second, early in that second half, had a 27-point lead at one point. It was just it was a clinic in that second half, and Kansas just looked lost at one point where like they did not know what to do on offense. Hunter Dickinson was really kind of like the only outlet for that team for that game, because no one else was really able to actually give them much of anything. I mean, I'm kind of going back through the box scores just to kind of remind myself. Hunter Dickinson, yeah, was like, but even he was actually largely ineffective, with 6 for 15 from the field. KJ Adams did have 10, but he didn't shoot well. And it was such a balanced attack from the Zags. 21 from Watson, 17 Hickman, Ben Gregg in this game, again, talked about him over and over and over again, just how much energy he brings to the table and the difference that he makes when he's playing well. I mean, 15 points, 9 rebounds, and he was 6 for 6 from the floor. Like, he was that energy guy, especially in that first half, that kept the Zags in it. Braden Huff played well in this one. He had 11. Like, everything was going the Zags way in this one. Over the course of the weekend, it was going their way. And when it's all said and done, first weekend in the NCAA tournament is over. Who is still standing? Gonzaga, because that has been the case for 9 straight years. And eventually, that run will end, because it always ends eventually. But what they have been able to accomplish in this run is nothing short of remarkable. I mean, nobody else has this. Nobody else has done this in the field of 64 era. 9 straight Sweet 16s. And that's the thing that's wild. Do you look at the last time that happened? What? You have to roll all the way back to 2014, the last time they did not get to the second weekend. And that was also probably the last time they were in a similar scenario as they were to this year, where they had to scramble and win the WCC tournament to get into the field. That was the last time. And for everything that this team has gone through, you look at these, not struggles, but you look at just like how the metrics did not help them early on. They didn't get the big wins that we are used to seeing from this team. They didn't beat Purdue, as the example. They didn't beat San Diego State. They didn't beat a Santa Clara team that even though, yes, it was a 1-point game, it's still a loss. And there were question marks, and there were a lot of new pieces, and there were like, what do you do without Drew Timmy? What about no more Julian Strother? How quickly can Graham EK fit into everything? Is Dusty Stromer really the answer at the 3? You had to run without Steel Venters. Like, all of these things, there were so many things that happened over the course of the season that to think about where they are now, because a month ago we were talking about them still being on the outside looking in. And now they're very much in the conversation to be there at the end. You look at the remaining teams, the remaining 16 teams left in the tournament. I mean, yes, there are still obviously some juggernauts. UConn has continued to steamroll everybody, and it's hard to ignore that. Purdue looks about as good as anybody as well. They hammered Utah State on Sunday, and Zach Edey is still the unstoppable force, the immovable object, and that is something that Gonzaga is going to have to figure out a solution of how to deal with him, because he has been one of the best players in college basketball over the last couple of years. He is a foul magnet, which is obviously a concerning thing for the Zags based on their depth. Now, we know they have big man depth, but if Graham EK, let's say he's the one who gets in early foul trouble, Braden Huff's going to have to step in, and he's going to have to play well against a Zach Edey who has the experience level, obviously has the height level. He knows how to act to this stage. Obviously, Purdue still needs to prove something as well. this almost is starting to feel like the Virginia team of a few years back, that after the year after they lost to UMBC as a 16, when UMBC was a 16, they came back and won the whole thing. This almost kind of feels like that sort of vibe for Purdue. So again, it'll be fascinating to kind of go through that and just kind of pick up the pieces and really feel like what's going to happen this week. What's Friday going to look like? Because this is not the same Gonzaga team that played Purdue back in November. This is not the same Purdue team that played them back in November. And the Purdue players acknowledge that. It's like, these are more or less two different teams than the last time they saw each other. The pieces are the same, but the rotations and the road that each of them have taken to be able to get here has changed who they are. And so we'll get all to that into that later in the week. So another thing that's happened over the course of the last week or so is that the portal officially opened last Monday, and there was a lot of chatter, and I didn't dive into any of it, but I think there's something to be said about, or something a little bit concerning about the fact that the portal, and you had guys jumping already, which you can say is a good thing for the players because it gives them more time to kind of shop their services around, get more information, and figure out where's going to be the best landing spot for them come the fall. At the same time, that means even the teams who are in the tournament have to be paying attention and trying to recruit for next year when they're still trying to win games as part of March Madness. And this becomes the challenging thing of like all the teams who essentially didn't make the tournament have almost a little bit of an advantage because now they have the greater opportunity to start pick up other guys and really dive into that. But also we still have all these teams who are not going to, we're going to have split priorities, split attentions on the tournament, but then also thinking about next year and doing all of that. And then maybe some of the guys who are currently on rosters, what it almost feels like eventually it's going to happen where they're going to be guys currently on tournament teams who might say, I need to hit the portal faster so I have a better shot, and walks out on their team. Now, you can say that might be a bad look for them and that wouldn't be a great idea or whatever else, but I don't think it's that far-fetched to think that that might eventually happen even by next year, or hell, I mean, there's still a few weeks left. We could maybe someone, it does happen within the course of this tournament that someone actually leaves from an active tournament team. It just feels like it's wrong to have it happen so early and not wait until after the whole season is done. Wait until that first full week of April and then go ahead and open up the portal and have it official, and they can start doing whatever they need to do, because they still have largely probably what, 2-3 months to really figure it out. That should be plenty of time to kind of dot your I's, cross your T's, and just figure out where the best landing spot for you is. And the WCC is already kind of being hit by the portal pretty hard as names have started to roll out. Pacific has 9 on the list so far, according to verbal commits. Pepperdine has 7. Portland has 7. LMU has 3. San Diego has 2. Santa Clara has 1 already. And, I mean, some of the notable names, like, we've kind of gone over them. Javon Porter, Michael Ajayi, Houston Millett are on the list from Pepperdine. Wanzi Gorosito is on the list from Portland. That's kind of like that's a big one to me. Like, he had a really improved sophomore year. He's going to be a really solid player for somebody. So it'll be interesting to see where he ends up. Dom Harris from LMU, Michael Graham also LMU, and then Justin Wright also hits the portal again. At least like the latter two, Harris and Wright, both were transfers into LMU. So it'll be transfer number 2 for both of them. Wayne McKinney III is hitting the portal for San Diego. Now, he hit the portal last year, but ended up coming back. So I'm going to be curious to see if he sticks with it this time and ends up going elsewhere. And that is a blow for San Diego, because this is a squad that like was starting to kind of piece things together, starting to look forward. But there are going to be a lot of, guards on the market. And I think this San Diego team is going to be in need of a veteran to kind of like lead this young squad, because there's a lot of young, good pieces there. They need that vet leader. Which is what Wayne McKinney was to this group. But unless he returns, they're going to have to find one all over again. And at least in the case of Pacific and Pepperdine, there was no surprise on the large number of transfers for each of those, because they don't have head coaches yet. And so we're still kind of waiting to see who are these two programs going to be able to bring in. And the longer that kind of drags out, the more challenging it's going to be for whoever takes the job to start to rebuild that roster, because you really are going to have a plan in place immediately. If you're going to hope to actually kind of, maybe not save face, but make the best of what will be probably a rough first year in either location, especially also when you consider Washington State and Oregon State are coming as well. And LMU, we talked a little bit about it last week. So some of the coaching changes, they added Lorenzo Romar. So this is going to be the first kind of go around of he as one of the assistants to Stan Johnson, how that's going to impact recruiting, what sort of players they might start to look at that might be a little bit different than the ones they've been able to bring in over the last few years under Stan Johnson. So the portal is alive. The portal is out there. I do actually need to double check and just kind of see, because I forgot to actually check on Oregon State as one of the new teams in the WCC, and see if anybody's actually left Beaverton quite yet. But even thinking about it, it's like we're still very early in the process. It's going to be interesting to see where we go. And there's as of right now, no movement on the Oregon State front. So as of now, Oregon State is as it is. But we'll get into Oregon State and Washington State in the offseason. We won't talk much about them yet. We still have one team playing basketball, and that is Gonzaga. They will be playing Friday against Purdue in the Sweet 16. And I think this is going to be a fascinating game, because these two are different squads from when they last saw each other. I would still lean that Purdue is going to pull this one out. That is who I picked in my own bracket. I do think that this probably is the end of the road for the Zags, but considering the season, considering how everything kind of transpired to get to this point, and at least of the Zag fans I've talked to, they will take this as being the end of the road, because 9 straight still means a lot, still means something for a team that was maybe not in the tournament just a month ago, was maybe a 7 seed even a week and a half ago, ended up a 5 seed, took 2 games in the tournament, and looks just as much the part as they always have once it was all said and done. All right, well, that'll do it for this episode of the unofficial WCC Hoops podcast. Be sure to hit the subscribe button on YouTube and your favorite streaming services. Follow on social at Posts by Zach. We have one team left. It's the Zags. So we'll have a couple more episodes as we kind of go along, and then we'll start to move into our off-season content and start to kind of piece that all together. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and I will catch you later.